Okay, as per usual tradition, we'll start off with Radiance Developments. Get this going. So I'm just going to talk a little bit about what I'll be working on, or what I have been working on for this year, and what I hope to be working on next fiscal year. This is work funded by the Lawrence Berkeley National Lab, as usual. So just as an overview, the first thing that I'm going to talk about is the rewrite of RT-Contrib, which has been renamed to R-Contrib for reasons I'll explain, and the addition of the Schickman-Shirley reflection model to core routines, minor improvements to the TRAD graphical user interface, and some important bug fixes for BSDF. And this is actually ongoing work. So that's some that we haven't tracked down, we don't think. So this won't take too long because I don't have that much to present on it, but I recently in June and July rewrote RT-Contrib because it really needed it. So this is the first time I've rewritten a program substantially in Radiance. The original implementation had too much memory overhead, especially for complex ray trees, and it didn't scale well with the number of processes. It took me a while to figure out how to improve it, and that's why we had to suffer with the first version for so long. But the new version has the same behavior and same options. It's just much faster. So how is it different? It's got a new name, so that's obviously the first difference. And it's built in source RT instead of source util, in case you track such things. That means that it's one of the core rendering programs now. Whereas before it was a utility that called rtrace, now it's at the same level as rview, rpict, and rtrace. So it no longer calls rtrace, instead it's completely self-contained and calls the ray tracing routines from within the main process. But it will create sub-processes that are essentially copies of the parent. In Unix, when you create a sub-process, by default you create a copy of yourself, and then you usually fork off a different process. But in this case, it's just multiple copies of the same process, and one parent process coordinates the actions of the children. The dash C option, when you're averaging multiple samples, is now particularly efficient in this implementation because it reduces the amount of communication even further between the parent and the children. And that's actually the main benefit of R-Contrib over RT-Contrib, is there's less passing of data going on and less parsing of data going on. Simultaneously, I added a dash C option to VW-Rays. So VW-Rays is the little utility that generates ray origins and directions for a particular view. And the dash C option just sends multiple origins and directions that are, in most cases, slightly jittered for the same pixel to RT-Contrib so that it can average together the results using a match dash C option. And this has a big advantage of reducing noise during rendering. So this is the, you know, dash C1 default, and this is using 16 samples per pixel instead. You could have done the same thing before by increasing the resolution of your image and then reducing it with pfilt in the end. The downside of doing that with RT-Contrib is if you're outputting hundreds or even 1,000 files, that's a lot of data I/O, and then it becomes I/O constrained. Whereas if you use the dash C option, you're not I/O constrained and it's much faster. Any questions on that? I mean, feel free to interrupt with questions because this is going to be short otherwise. As I said, I've added a new material model to Radiance based on a Schickman-Shirley formulation of the RDFs. It's very similar to the existing Ward, Geisler, Moroder, Durer model that's already there. It's added mostly for comparison purposes. We were writing a paper where we wanted to compare different models, and we thought just for fairness, we should have. It's probably the best alternative to the existing radiance model, at least in my view. It has a Fresnel component that's always active, and that's the main appearance difference and numerically the main difference between this model and the existing model. And it also has a separately colored specular component, so you can control the color of the specular component independently. And it was Nicholas Bonneil who initiated this edition, and then I sort of finished it off. So compared to the existing model, where you specify two roughness values, now you specify two specular powers, and then the specular component becomes a color rather than a single value. So it doesn't have a metal version and a plastic version. Instead, you control the appearance of it to provide manipulating the specular color. And these powers have to do with cosines raised to a power. So it's a different way of thinking about things, but it's more in line with Phong, which a lot of computer graphics people anyway are familiar with. And you can match them up pretty well. Here I've just picked a specular power taken from this example. This roughness corresponds to this specular power approximately, and this roughness corresponds to that specular power. And there's actually a formula that you can use to work go between them approximately anyway. And you can see they look fairly similar, though. The main difference you see is around a Shickman-Shirley, there's a little more of a whitish ring at the edges, so at grazing, the Fresnel component brings the specular value up. And that's the main thing you'll notice visually. Numerically, they're also a little bit different. So any questions on this? It hasn't even made its way into the documentation yet, but that will happen before the 4.2 release. One other thing that I worked on a little bit is the improvements to the TRAD program. For those of you who don't know, TRAD is the graphical user interface to the RAD program, which is based on TCL. So I had a couple of surprises. One is I didn't really realize people were still using this, and I also didn't realize it was still working after all these years, because there had been problems with TCL-TK. Certain versions of it didn't work quite the same, and it was kind of broken at some points, but apparently they came back into line with the original version. Without my doing anything, it started working again. I don't really know. I did have to go and fix some TCL-TK issues, and these appear to be related to bugs in TCL-TK from what I can figure out, so I had to have some workarounds. And I added a slider for the number of processes, and this was requested by Terrence McMinn, and that's when I realized that people were still using this when he made that request. So what's... So the other thing that's still going on is I'm working on some bugs having to do with angle directions and reciprocity in BSDF routines. There was a flaw that I introduced last minute right before the 4.1 release in GenBSDF. That's fixed in the head. So if you're using GenBSDF, make sure to work from the head. There was a bug in the proxy transmission, which was fixed, and there's some bug that has not completely been resolved in tensor tree reciprocity, and it might have to do with angle directions, and David's been helping me sort that out. So what's coming next? I've been working intensely on the deliverable for this year, which is an interpolation method to take BSDF measurements, primarily from PabOpto, but they can really be from any source, and converting them into a variable resolution BSDF representation. And this is a hard problem because typically the measurements are at sparse incident angles and irregularly spaced exident angles. And so getting that into something that's regularized and usable in a representation is a hard problem. I also hope to be working on an annual version of DC Time Step that will do what David talked about yesterday of computing the entire year rather than an hour at a time or a point of time. And then Andy McDeal has this idea for either a four or five phase method, which is an extension to the three phase method that considers solar direct independently. And so that's something we're hoping to work on this coming year. And these are contingent on getting funding for it. And I'll end with this picture from the BSDF interpolation problem, which gives you an idea of the difficulty. These yellow points are the actual measured data from the PAB-OPTO Ganeo photometer. And you can't really see their cones, but these little pink or magenta cones are the subsampled points, because the original points are anisotropic, you know, non-uniformly distributed over this surface. It makes it very hard to interpolate. So I resample those to come up with points that are more evenly spaced, and then use a Gaussian lobe model to compute this surface, which approximates the original measurements. And that's one of six steps that I need to complete in order to get this interpolation working. So it is a difficult problem. And that's really all I have to present, so thank you very much. Did anyone want to ask any questions before we go on to the rest of the program? Yes?
Just a quick question. Is the Shikman-Shirley reflection material in 4.1 or only in the head?
It's only in the head at this point.
Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah. So,
The
VW raised 1C is expecting
the same as the pixel sample
as
the behavior,
as the which one?
As the pixel sample, 1PS.
The dash PS? No, it's not exactly the same, because it's sort of the same as increasing the resolution and then passing it through a box filter. That's the effective result. Whereas normally what you do with RPIC is you increase the resolution and then you use p-filt, and if you had a Gaussian filter, then it would be slightly different results. So it's not quite as good as increasing the resolution, but it's much faster in this application. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you're always, the PS option in RPIC is telling how frequently to actually send samples, and then it will subsample when it needs to. There's no adaptive subsampling with VW arrays. It's always going to sample every pixel that you send. So.
What are the situations that you really need to use this new model? If you're modeling something from reality, what are the compelling reasons?
You mean a Shikman-Shirley model?
Yes.
If you have BRDF data that you're fitting to a model, in some cases the Shikman-Shirley model will fit the data better than the WGMD model. And so that's the compelling reason for using it, is if it's a better fit to your data. I haven't done a lot of fitting of real measurements, but Peter Apin-Benowitz presented a talk last year where he showed that the existing model did not fit real data well, and he was asking for other better models. I mean, the ultimate solution is to have a data-driven model like the one that I'm working on, where you interpolate the data and you tabulate it in some form, and the form that I'm using is the tensor tree, and then use that to render. That's going to be the best. But the fallback is a simpler model that's got just a few parameters, like a Shikman-Shirley, that does a reasonable job fitting the data. And, you know, it's... It's up to you to figure out whether it's needed or not. Any others? All right, so let's move on to the first real speaker.